Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Lawrence Norton, Deputy Director of the Brennan Center's Democracy Program. The Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law is a nonpartisan law and policy institute that seeks to improve our systems of democracy and justice. Mr. Norton has authored several nationally recognized reports and articles related to voting rights and voting technology, including Better Design, Better Elections, July 2012, and Voting Law Changes in 2012. His work has been featured in media outlets across the country, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, and National Public Radio. He's testified before Congress and several state legislatures on numerous occasions. Welcome, Larry Norton.
Thanks for having me on, Alan.
Well, there are a lot of questions we want to ask and answer. We saw Preet Bharara standing up the other day and not so subtly hinting that all of the indictments we have seen are going to be followed by more trouble. Give us an assessment of what you think is going on in Albany.
It is extraordinary. I think this has been building for several years. To quote Preet, the U.S. attorney from the Southern District, that there's a culture of corruption in Albany. And this is not really any news or a surprise to anybody that pays attention to what's going on in Albany. We have basically a flawed, corrupt political system where big money dominates everything. And as a result, unfortunately, you've got a lot of good people coming up into Albany, but it's a corrupting system. And the numbers, you know, when you stand back and you look at the numbers of legislators who have been accused or convicted of crimes, it's really extraordinary. And in particular, any kind of comprehensive reform this session was really held up in the Senate. And if you look at the Senate, that is particularly where things have been bad. There are only 63 members in the Senate. In just the last 7 years, you've seen 13 out of just a 63 member body, 13 fined, charged, or convicted of crimes. In less than 5 years, you've seen four leaders of that body charged or convicted of federal crimes. It is extraordinary. It's been Democrats. It's been Republicans. It's been members of the Independent Democratic Conference. And something needs to change. I think the public has really lost faith in the system and is disgusted, and we need some kind of comprehensive change. It's really a shame that nothing happened this session to start changing that.
Well, we have a lot of directions we can go in, but I'll bite. What should we do?
Well, the big thing I think we have to do is change our campaign finance system. As I said, I really do believe there's a corrupt system in place that it breeds corruption. If you look at where money is coming from in Albany, 70% of the money that was raised by legislators in 2012 was from not from people, not from individuals, but from special interests, from either corporations, political action committees, or unions. That's kind of extraordinary. Legislators are not spending time with their constituents. They're spending time raising money from big money donors. And very often they're spending a majority of their time with those folks. So when that's what your job becomes, the result is, you know, it shouldn't be all that surprising. The result is that priorities become what those big donors' priorities are. And all you have to do is look at legislation, you know, and this is all legal. It's not the illegal part, but all you have to do is look at legislation that has been passing in Albany and that's probably going to pass this session. And you can trace it back directly to who's providing money. And that basic thing needs to change. We need to start increasing the influence of everyday New Yorkers and putting a cap on the extraordinary amounts of big money that is going in and warping our system.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I agree with you about the situation. I'm not so sure I agree with you that, although I'd love to see campaign financing for a lot of reasons, I think it democratizes the system. I think the reason these guys don't want to do it is because they think they don't want Bernie from around the corner running against them. And they have, you know, a lot of money in their accounts and the rest. But I also believe that were we to have campaign financing and were they to opt in, and they're not going to have to opt in to the system, what you would end up with is a bunch of people who not only take the government money, but who will be doing all of the corruptive things that you've been talking about, including setting up, you know, health systems that where they get the money and their favorite people. I don't think that's going to change, Larry.
Well, I would say a couple things. First of all, I think, you know, everything that I'm talking about, increasing the influence of average New Yorkers by providing some kind of public match, bringing down contribution limits, that has to be coupled with increased enforcement. And NYPERG did a great report, and I'm sure you've covered and seen it.
Sure.
About a month ago, talking about the hundreds of thousands of campaign violations that happen every legislative session that are not enforced in any way. So I think if you combine limiting the influence of big donor money, increasing the influence of everyday New Yorkers with some kind of public match, and increasing enforcement and increasing transparency, we've seen this kind of system work in other places. Connecticut adopted a system like this and went from one of the most corrupt states in the country to, over the last few years, having the lowest level of federal prosecutions that they've ever seen. Mm. New York City, obviously, has a public financing system, and while there are problems in New York City, if you compare to what existed before the system was adopted, and it was adopted in response to a huge corruption crisis, New York City has not seen, at the local level, that kind of corruption since the system was adopted. I'm not saying it's a magic wand that it will change everything, but it does start to change the culture a bit. And as you pointed out, it gives the opportunity for people to run against these guys who have accumulated massive war chests under the current system.
Okay.
One of the things,
Larry, I just want to stop you for a minute, and because I love having you on, and because we'll run out of time if I don't push ahead. the governor wanted to, quote, clean up Albany. He said so in the beginning. And now he's talking about a Moreland Act Commission.
Yeah.
I think our listeners are going to want to know the details of what you see as a Moreland Act Commission doing.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll see what he does with it. But I do think, given how disappointing it is that the Senate, the leadership of the Senate, wouldn't allow some kind of campaign finance reform bill to come to the floor to be voted on, this will hopefully be something. And the Moreland Commission is, you know, is appointed in accordance with the Moreland Act, which allows the governor to appoint people to investigate. And what he said that they would investigate would be the campaign finance system and campaign finance abuses. There's an opportunity to really bring attention to this issue, to the reliance of politicians on big contributions, to how they're not accountable to everyday New Yorkers. So, I, you know, we'll have to see what comes of it. But if that is indeed what it focuses on, and it has subpoena power to start getting files and finding out, you know, where these contributions came from and why they were given, and if it's done in a relatively quick way and makes recommendations for fixing the system, I think that's all to the good.
Do you trust the governor on this?
The governor has been, you know, he has been outspoken about the need for this. And he, you know, nobody has benefited from the current system perhaps more than the governor in terms of raising lots of money.
Yeah,
so I think it's to his credit that he keeps raising this issue and pointing out that the current system is problematic. And so I appreciate that he has, up to this point, led on this issue, that he has, you know, he campaigned on it, and he has said in the last few State of the States that this is something that he wanted to get done. And the fact that, you know, he said yesterday he wasn't willing to compromise on this, that the legislature wanted to do half a loaf, and he said no, and that he's going to appoint a Moreland Commission, I think, you know, that actions are what speak. And so far, you know, he has been pushing this very strongly.
Well, not to be too cruel about this, he also said he was going to veto the apportionment bill, and he didn't do it. Mm-hmm. I always suspect politicians of sometimes wanting the issue rather than the result. So I'm a little worried about this. I saw the establishment of a Jake Hope board, which I thought, frankly, turned out to be what a lot of people have been calling J-joke. And that was the half a loaf that you're saying he didn't want. And with all kinds of things having to do with who gets to be appointed, and even if the Republicans are out of office, they still get the lion's share of the way it's all going to work. So, yeah, so I have, I just say I'm from Missouri. I'd like to see it. That's a question.
I think, you know, the answer is we'll see what's done, right? We'll see the actions in the end. And so far, as I said, the governor has been pushing this. He didn't have to say he was going to set up a Moreland Commission. We'll see what he does with it. And as I said, if it really is focused on campaign fundraising and abuses, if he appoints good people to it, and if he has them, if he gives them a limited time, so that when their recommendations come out, the legislature is forced to act on it, hopefully before the next election, then all of those things are very positive and to his credit. Look, the governor has a big bully pulpit, and I would have liked to have seen something get passed this session. It didn't, and I think it's to his credit that in this case we didn't settle for half a loaf. And the Independent Democratic Conference and the Republicans decided in the Senate they didn't want this to come to the floor. There was a bill that passed in the Assembly. It wasn't perfect, but it was something. Mm. And they wouldn't let it. So this is where we are.
There's always a game within a game within a game. The Democrats for years have been passing, you know, legislation, progressive legegislation, knowing full well that the Republicans weren't going to take it in the Senate. The real question becomes, with the Democrats in the Assembly, will they pass it when they know damn well that the other guys are going to go along with it?
One thing I will say in this case is I think there's more pressure than ever to actually do it. I think in the past, you know, you had a year where the Senate Democrats took over and then the Assembly didn't pass campaign finance reform that year.
Yeah, right.
But I think there's so much pressure now, given all the corruption scandals. And frankly, there's a huge coalition that there has never been before to make this happen. And I do think that is going to make a difference going forward.
Let me just get to Sheldon Silver. Here is a guy who I've known for years, had him on this very program we're talking on. I can't even count the number of times, and is pleasant enough in the rest. But his job is to take the heat for his conference. That's why they like him, because when it comes to something that they don't want to see happen, he's the guy who'll stand up and take the barrage. You know, we see New Yorkers saying, well, we think it's time for another guy. What do you make of all of that?
Oof. You know,
I knew I'd get an oof. Yeah, go ahead.
That's certainly beyond the kind of issue that the Brennan Center looks at. We really look at not individuals, but the need for systemic change. So,
but I'm sorry, Larry, but isn't it really, I know that there are limits on what you can say, but isn't it really about who's running the show? And that if you make a change, sometimes the change in personnel, change in characters will make a difference.
One thing I will say about this, you know, the Brennan Center is somewhat well known in Albany for issuing a report on the state legislature for being the most dysfunctional in the country a few years ago. And one of the things that I said at the time and I continue to say is, you know, we identified all these problems in the rules and how it makes it very difficult. It's not a transparent system, makes it very difficult for the public to be involved. That is the choice of the legislature. It isn't imposed on them. Legislature decides what rules it runs by. It decides, it's not about one individual or another. They make that decision collectively, and that's true with everything. So, I think in the end, actually, it probably matters less who the particular leader is in a chamber than whether or not the legislators themselves decide that they want to take responsibility for things. And you know that goes. Really, I'm going to bring it back to an area where I'm more comfortable. But when you talk about what happened in the Senate this year with campaign finance reform, you have an independent Democratic conference that said they couldn't or wouldn't bring campaign finance reform and other issues to the floor because the Republicans objected. That was their choice. They decided that they chose to do that. They didn't have to do it that way. They certainly could have brought stuff to the floor if they wanted to, where there was majority support. And I would say in the case of campaign finance reform, the public is overwhelmingly for it. So I think individual folks can be an easy target in some way. That's not necessarily wherever changes need to be made. I think the changes need to be made at the rank and file level.
Well, I'm not arguing with you. We do know, as political scientists, we know that people love their legislators, but they hate the legislature, and on and on. But I do disagree with you, by the way, just for whatever it's worth, mm-hmm. that these top positions are crucial. Now, I wanted to go into another direction, and that is that, as you know, Plunkett of Tammany Hall, he said, there's legal and illegal bribery. And I think that the Republicans in the state Senate understand that distinction extremely well, at least most of them do. And, you know, that if a wife gets a job, if a kid gets a job, if a firm gets money funneled into it one way or the other. But I think what we've seen in some of the senators on the Democratic side is that they just didn't understand where that line was drawn. I'm sickened, frankly, yeah. by both of them. And I wonder what we can do about, you know, the concept of legal bribery.
Yeah. Well, I would say changing the corrupt campaign financing system that's in place is a very good place to start. I think one of the reasons that it's so confusing in terms of what is legal and what is illegal is we have these ridiculous rules that allow corporations to give basically unlimited amounts with all the loopholes that are involved.
Sure. Housekeeping accounts, that kind of thing, right?
Yes, and there's the LLC loophole, which allows a company to form subsidiaries so that it can give more money over and over again.
Sure.
And then they get their, we're seeing at the session, and then they get legislation that passed that is very favorable to them, or they stop legislation from getting passed that maybe a majority of New Yorkers favor, but some big donors don't. That's legal. All of that is legal, but I would say it's very corrupting. I would say that, if that's how somebody keeps their job to stay in office, most people would say there's something corrupt about that, although it isn't illegal. So I think starting to change some of those rules would be a huge first step in making clear what is legal and what is illegal.
Now,
I also think, frankly, more enforcement is important, and there's no enforcement right now of even the current rules.
So let me ask you this. Do you think conceptually now, because I certainly do, that if you gave New Yorkers, you keep putting your faith in them, gave them the chance to vote in initiative and referendum for rules changes, I mean, I think that's how so many states have gotten them, that they would put their heads on straight and vote for some of the things you're talking about?
Yeah, I do. I don't have any question about it. That's how public financing was passed in New York City. It was through a charter revision. The public voted for it. I don't think there's any question. Look, there are certain issues on which legislatures have a self-conflict. One of them is on changing campaign finance laws, because that's how they got elected and that's how they stay
sure.
in office.
Sure.
Another is in the redistricting area. There are a few areas like that where I do think there's a strong argument to be made that those kinds of questions maybe should be put to the public.
Now, the governor, I think, has missed an opportunity, as all governors have over the years. Albany is the district attorney in Albany is a very powerful, could be a very powerful person, but doesn't get the kind of resources, because this is where all the paychecks come from and everything else. So the governor passes this thing saying, okay, we're going to give all district attorneys a little bit more power. Whereas there should be, in my opinion, an enforcement unit right here with district attorney Soares. And, he wants it. They took state troopers out of his office who were helping him to investigate. It sounds to me like, you can make a lot of noise about how you want reform, but there are some simple fixes and that they're not being done.
There certainly are simple fixes. I would say another simple fix is to give the State Board of Elections some kind of enforcement council that is not not partisan and that actually has funding. There are zero investigators in the state board of elections.
For a reason. For a reason, Larry. Finance.
Absolutely.
For a reason.
Absolutely.
Look, it has never been a distinguished organization. They get appointments from both sides. They know that where mm-hmm. their bread is buttered. What do you think they're going
to
do?
Yep. But again, that should be a relatively easy thing to fix. But I do think we need the bigger fix, too. I do think that we've reached a point in New York where small fixes aren't enough, that there really does need to be a comprehensive change to our system, both to give return some credibility to the system, but also to just start getting more people involved.
Well, we agree, Larry, we agree. The question now becomes how. How do you make it happen? You know, you guys are doing your share. You put out reports. You do your do your thing. We have these radio shows all the time with all of these people on, and we try to stick it to them and do the rest of the stuff. But in fact, these people know where their bread is buttered, and they're going to go and they're going to go down screaming.
But if I want to give a slightly more optimistic angle to this, which is I do think we are closer than we have ever been to really have comprehensive reform in New York, and part of that is because of all the bad news that we've been seeing and all the corruption scandals that we've been seeing and Preet Bharara.
Ironic, isn't it? I, by the way, think Preet Bharara is the answer. In the end, as he starts picking these people off one after another, it puts the fear of God into a lot of people. And I agree.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I agree with you. We are closer than ever before because we're really on it. But I want a governor who really knows what, you know, means what he says. And we haven't had one. I think Cuomo has really shown himself to at least say the right things. Whether he really wants it with, what, $22 million in the bank or whatever it is for campaign finance is another whole story.
Obviously, the proof is in the pudding. But I would say, you know, if you look at how this has happened in the past in New York City, in Connecticut, in Arizona, where these things have happened, it has come out of huge corruption scandals, and so it's sad. But that is where the opportunity is here. And frankly, New Yorkers have elected people that have been in favor of these kinds of reforms, and that's the way to do it.
We are out of time. Our guest has been Larry Norden, Deputy Director of the Brennan Center's Democracy Program. Larry, even though we don't agree on everything, I really loved having you on the show, and I hope you'll come back.
Appreciate being on. Thanks so much, Alan.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org. We'll be right back.